The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code GUARDIAN to get 20% off during the month of September.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, League Cup. And it's the return of Mr. Controversy. After lengthy absence for making a meal of his markers, Nicholas Bentner is back. But Arsenal win all the same. Elsewhere, Chicharito's back too, as David Moyes finally wins against Liverpool. And after 5 months, Cisse scores. And Luis Suarez returns for the Reds. Core elsewhere. Busy midweek across Europe. There's news about Gattuso. A spicy build-up to the Madrid derby. While in London, shock revelations in store as the apprentice Villa Spurs faces the master Mourinho for the first time. No, Andre, I am your father. All that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Okay, interesting part ahead of us. Jacob Steinberg's here on medication, excitingly.
Yep.
What's up, Jacob?
I had my wisdom teeth out last week.
Oh, yeah. Is that really brutal?
It can be, yeah. Turns out it is.
And a week on, you're still...
10 days on.
Racked by pain.
Yeah, I'm on the mend. I'm back.
Are you feeling slightly woozy and liable to say anything?
No, hopefully liable to say nothing. It hurts to talk.
Barry.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you feeling?
I feel quite rough. I feel like I've had a big night out, but except I didn't. Right. So I'm slightly disappointed.
Maybe,
if I'd known I was going to feel this way today, I would have gone out.
Maybe your system's craving a big night out, and it's kind of... Paul McInnes.
Hiya.
Bright-eyed and very much...
Well, I'm deaf in one ear.
Oh.
Just to complete the round.
Hey.
Yeah, I just woke up this morning, can't hear a thing.
All right, well, Jacob's on your left. He's not going to be saying anything, so...
Axis of silence on the left here.
Do you want some Nurofen?
No, I'm okay.
Right. In other news, listeners, here, League Cup, third round... And a lot of attention for this, particularly because of the return of Suarez, but other big stories as well. We'll start, though, at Old Trafford. Man United against Liverpool. And David Moyes, as I mentioned, finally gets that win in a big game against Liverpool.
Yeah, they needed that after Sunday's embarrassment at Manchester City. And they were maybe just about worth the win. It was a tight game. I thought, looking at the two sides at the start, I thought that Liverpool were probably the favourites. And I think they probably had it was a missed opportunity for them last night, given they probably put out their strongest team bar Coutinho, who was injured, and United had Giggs and Jones midfield, which wouldn't be their first choice by any stretch of the imagination, and Alex Butner playing, no Van Persie and so on. But I don't think Liverpool really went for it as hard as they could have done, to be honest.
They had a good passage in the first half, didn't they, where they had several half chances, but Sturridge's control let him down quite a lot and didn't seem to be quite on the same wavelength with Suarez yet.
A lot of reports think it was Suarez who maybe looked a little bit off his best. But Barry, what did you make of his return?
I thought he had a decent game, but Liverpool played well, and I don't think any of their players played particularly badly, apart from Jose Enrique letting Chicharito roam free for the corner from which he scored the goal. But yeah, Suarez, you're bound to look a little rusty if you haven't played competitive football in a while. You know, he's had a couple of international games, and that's about it since April, is it? I wouldn't worry too much about it. I mean, it was a really entertaining game, both as teams played well, and it's a nice one for him to get under his belt, you know, to try and restore some sharpness.
Right, Luis Suarez.
Yes.
Yeah, and nice for David Moyes as well, who put Kagawa in the side. And how was he? Meh?
Reasonably quiet.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty quiet, actually. If I hadn't seen the team sheet before the game, I wouldn't really know he was playing. He didn't feature much in the first half, and then he was withdrawn in the second. So, yeah.
Literally?
Yes, quite literally. Well, in every sense of the word, right. I suppose. I suspect he'll have been disappointed because he probably thought he had a big point to prove, and he didn't.
As you know, Paul, the challenges don't stop for United because next up in the fourth round, anyway, of the League Cup, you've got Norwich.
That's right.
Yeah.
All the way to Old Trafford after we kind of scraped a late win at Watford on Tuesday with a little bit of gumption, which was quite nice for us, which we haven't shown of late. But it appeared to be what United were displaying for Moyes on Wednesday too.
That's very exciting. This weekend, meanwhile, Man United will be facing West Brom. Do you know what the score was last time they faced each other? Do you remember this game?
5-5.
5-5 in May. Extraordinary. West Brom, of course, different side since then.
Yeah, no Lukaku to come on and score a second-half hat-trick, is it? Something like that. Anyway.
It's a thing. But they did get a goal this weekend, at last. Last weekend, rather.
Yeah, and then they got a goal against Arsenal as well.
They did indeed, and that was a very exciting game. They climb out of the bin-marked crisis.
Who is in the bin mark crisis right now?
Well, I'm not sure because Man United read this stat.
Surely Sunderland are in
Bin mark crisis. Yeah, we'll come on to them in a second. I did read this stat about Man United. Of Man United's 13 Premier League titles, six of them, that's almost half, have seen them only win two of their opening six fixtures, which is pretty much what they've done this year. So, yeah.
Well, Daniel Taylor, in his report on the game, said that Moyes, just by winning that game, has gone from sort of being the worst Manchester United manager of all time to becoming the most successful new Manchester United manager since Sir Matt Busby in 19 whenever that was.
He's certainly the most successful new Manchester United manager in what, 20 years? Yeah. I love statistics.
But it's also true is if you look back prior to Fergie, you know, there was a long succession of managers who never lived up to Busby, so it's perhaps a slightly misleading stat.
No Robin van Persie, he's got a groin thing.
We've all got a groin thing, baby.
All right then, Paul. And West Brom, as you mentioned, they scored a goal against the Gunners, but got beat on penalties. Hey, that's now 11. Does it count as a win, an away win, that?
I think the Arsenal fans count it as an away
win.
Right,
so that's 11 in a row.
Yeah.
Character, strength, mental discipline, toughness.
You know, maybe a little bit of depth in centre-half as well. Like, some of these people are now kind of always praising Per Mertesacker every game. Vermaelen's coming back into the side. You never know, it might be a second chance for him.
Don't like Vermaelen.
No, I mean, I didn't like him last season, but if you think two seasons ago...
Yeah, two seasons ago, we liked him. Yeah.
And he scored goals.
Yeah,
he We're a very fickle bunch.
We are.
Aren't we?
Well, we've got high standards.
Arsene needs to go, he needs to stay, he's terrible, he's great.
Yeah.
Cast him in bronze. In fact, replace the Michael Jackson statue at Fulham with one of Arsene Wenger.
It's an interesting idea, Paul. I'm not sure of the rationale, but I'm not that interested either. Arsene Wenger displaying enough mental strength to field a team that included Nicholas Bentner. We're all big fans of The Princess Bride here. This is a bit like that bit where they're dueling and he says, I'm not left-handed either, because he's been doing it with his wrong hand. Is it a bit of a snub to West Brom, that, playing Nicholas Bentner in the game?
What, you think it was insulting to West Brom?
It's a little bit like, I can still win even with Nicholas Bentner.
I still think Nicholas Bentner could come good.
How old is he now?
I don't know. He'll have retired in, like, shame, and I'll still be banging the drum for him. I must be the only person who doesn't think he's a complete joke of a footballer at this stage, apart from himself, obviously. I like the way he went out there determined not to draw attention to himself in any way by sporting a preposterous hairstyle. I mean, I didn't see this game, so I don't know how he played. Was he any good?
Well, to be fair, I'm judging him from the highlights where he did have one bit where he looked reasonably in control, but it was the chance where he was put through. Did you see that, Jacob?
No.
In your
stupor.
Stupor. Basically, a lovely ball through from, I think it was Gnabry, one of the many esoteric names in the Arsenal lineup yesterday. And Nicholas Bentner there with all sorts of time. So he's running towards the goal. Defender closing in, but he's got bags of time. Defender closing in, he's got bags of time. Basically, defender, in the immortal words of Sid Lowe, is closing in at about the same speed that the garbage compressor walls close in the Death Star in that film. But he still basically waits and waits and waits. Eventually, the defender just goes, look, I'm sorry, I'm going to take this off you. And then he falls over and stuff. And it was almost like a metaphorical for his entire career. He just looked like a golden opportunity and he waited and he waited and he waited.
But he got the assist, though. At the same time.
Fair enough.
So, well done, Nicholas.
Do you think if he could, you know, you see something, you can go back in time and change something, would Bentner go back and change that time he had the opportunity to put Barcelona out of the Champions League by playing for Arsenal and fluffed his lines? That, I suspect, may be the defining moment of his career. That and the incident in the pizza parlour.
But there is
And the trendy West End nightclub.
Right.
So is this if you can go back in time but only change things that you've done? So you couldn't go back and kill Hitler? Because I would definitely kill Hitler above putting the chance in against Barcelona in a quarterfinal.
Perspective there from Paul McInnes. But what if it was only
things
you've done
in your own career? This is what I'm trying to clarify here in the rules.
I haven't really thought it through, to be honest.
Jacob?
Probably wouldn't have come in this morning.
Hey! Arsenal got an interesting run of games coming up because in the fourth round of the League Cup, they're going to be facing Chelsea. And that means... So then they'll have Chelsea at home, then Liverpool at home, then Dortmund away, then Man United away on the spin.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. This weekend, it's not that much easier, or arguably every bit as tough, because they are away at Swansea. No Theo Walcott, but for Aaron Ramsey, it's a trip to the land of my fathers.
Bad result for Swansea yesterday after a good string of results to get turned over by Birmingham.
Holders are out.
Holders are out.
Yep.
Ex-Norwich Academy boy Tom Adeyemi scored the third goal for Birmingham.
Did he?
Well done, young man. It'll be an interesting test for both our sides, I think, because you saw Loudrop talking before the game about the number of games they're playing, and it was, you know, they went from Sunday to Wednesday, but previously it was Monday to Thursday to Sunday to Wednesday, which is quite a heavy frequency of high-level games, and another one coming up.
If you're Swansea and you've got these extra Europa League commitments, you probably maybe think that the League Cup's not highest on your list of priorities.
I'd say they're probably not bothered at all. They won it last season, and the bigger fish to fry this season.
Are they going to batter Arsenal, to borrow your metaphor, Barry?
No.
Jacob? Maybe.
Maybe. We got a maybe from Jacob.
Well, my colleague was at the game against Palace on Sunday when they beat them 2-0.
So Swansea.
When there was absolutely no way he could have seen Swansea losing that game, you know, having watched it, he said they were just so much better than Palace were, and they were great against Valencia on Thursday. You know, Valencia, a bit of a joke. And what, for about 20 minutes, half an hour against United on the opening day, they played very well. They're a good side, and they've got a big squad that can cope, I think, with these extra games as well. Players who can come in.
Right, coming back into form, what do you think, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, really. He did say that he wanted to retain the League Cup. They did dominate the first half yesterday against Birmingham. And while their squad is big, it's not that big. Everybody's a kind of in contention for the first team place. You can't really go in and put in a whole shadow squad as the top sides could do. So I think however much rotation they're able to do, they will feel the effects of it over time.
Right. We never asked you about West Brom. Are they going to cause Moyes? Are they going to put Moyes back in the bin marked crisis?
I'd say it's very unlikely, but you know, you can't rule it out.
I'm not going to rule that out.
In fact, it's the game's at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
You just think, nah.
Do you not see Man United lurching back into stifling stalemate that they had?
I'd like to see them play Nani again. I thought he was good last night, and so much better than Valencia and Young, who's a joke. But Nani, although he can be frustrating and, you know, loses possession sometimes doing the wrong thing, he at least has a bit of confidence and will, you know, take a shot from outside the area or take a man on, which the other two seem so reluctant to do at the moment. And I think Moyes has to maybe get him into the side and try and get Kagawa back in again, give him a run.
And I think also Chicharito, you know, was a reminder of what he can do. I mean, as poor as Enrique's marking might have been, the run, the kind of, he ran around him, pulled back, went forward, went out and won the header and kind of created about 5 yards of space with just clever movement. So,
and it was a very well-taken goal as well.
That young winger Manchester United have, who looks about 11 years old.
Yanezai.
Exactly. He's a Belgian of Albanian extraction, I think. He's looked very impressive whenever he's played this season, and I suspect Moyes has to make a decision now to possibly give him a start at the expense of Young and Valencia, bring in him and Nani, I think.
It's interesting they won't give Zaha a game last night as well. Doesn't seem to be that
doesn't
big
like
a fan.
Him, apparently.
Yeah.
Not a United
also,
player.
Ryan Giggs was on a booking last night and kicked the ball away later on and didn't get sent off.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Not allowed to send him off.
So we want Yanezai, David, and we want, who else do we want? We want Nani in and Kagawa.
Yep.
That's who we want in the lineup.
Fabregas.
Fabregas.
Yeah. They are still only allowed field 11 players.
Right. Okay. That's enough for part one. We'll be back with a second dose of Premier League preview stuff as we turn our attention to the massive Tottenham-Chelsea game. Tottenham take on Chelsea this weekend. Jacob, excited?
Very excited.
I'm really excited too.
Yeah, should be a good game. It was a good game last year, 4-2 to Chelsea. Chelsea 1-0 up, went 2-1 down, and then Juan Mata scored two goals and set up a fourth for Chelsea. Wonder if he'll be allowed to do that on Saturday.
Well, they've been carrying him, apparently.
Indeed they have. Spurs, you've probably seen this stat, have only won 3 of their 42 Barclays Premier League games against Chelsea.
3 points lame. That's what they call it.
Right. Well, they look in a good position to change all that around. This pod today recorded especially early because I've got to go to Hendon to speak to Andre Villas-Boas. That's very exciting for me.
It is indeed. What's that for?
It's for, well, BT Sport have got the early game. So in their build-up, obviously the star man is going to be Andre Villas-Boas. And I get to ask the questions. What questions should I ask? Paul, you've been thinking about this, haven't you?
Well, a little bit. I'd like to know which of the many signings he's most excited about working with, really.
Do you think he'll actually come up with a name on that?
He'll probably see all of them. But I'd like to know I would like to know whether I'd like you to ask that question. And that was the question you asked.
Okay.
You're going to ask about Jose?
Well, I will, won't I? What should I ask about Jose?
Do they get on?
Do you get on? Do you still speak?
Yeah.
Barry? Andre Villas-Boas? You can dive into his brain.
What's his favourite colour?
Colour. Excellent.
Is it important to have English players in a Premier League side?
Right. Okay, good. Hey, find out what Andre Villas-Boas' favourite colour is, BT Sport, this Saturday lunchtime. Very exciting. They do look good, though, don't they, Spurs? Do you know, no team in Europe's top five leagues has conceded fewer goals than Spurs this season. That's pretty good. And, of course, if you add in their League Cup win over Aston Villa on this midweek.
Yeah, well, they won 4-0 last season.
What happened in the next game?
I can't remember, but Gareth Bale scored a hat-trick in that game. And on Tuesday night, it was Jermaine Defoe with two very good goals.
Good.
Interestingly, or not, as the case may be, Spurs managed their joint top of the table despite having only scored five goals. Seems quite odd after five games.
Yeah.
And I've thought of a better question you could ask Anders Villa, I suppose.
All right.
You could ask him, is he jealous of your kind of salt and pepper stubble, whereas right. his is sort of red, more red ginger
yeah.
type?
Yeah, that whole ginger thing might be touchy, though. And I think the press people are quite keen on no ginger questions.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no questions about time on Chelsea and ginger.
Have they mentioned that to you, or have you just read between the lines?
I'm reading between the lines on that one. Chelsea, of course, had their win away at, where did they go, Swindon, and Mata got a game. Torres looked good.
Yeah.
Against Swindon.
Mr. Van Ginkel got a really horrible injury.
He doesn't look good.
It was quite strange, actually, because he went over and you could see his knee just going the wrong way. But he was taken away and came back on for a few minutes and then went off again. But I think if the staff on the bench had the benefit of a replay, they certainly wouldn't have let him back on. I think the damage was done anyway.
Run it off.
It was a really gruesome-looking injury.
He's out for the World Cup, huh?
Out for the World Cup. They got that in early. Is there no way he can come back for the World Cup?
He's done his cruciate, hasn't he? So 9 months.
It's interesting, though, what
you
say.
Players come back from that in much, much less. Roberto Baggio, 3 months.
Oh, okay.
But that was Buddhist positivity.
No reason why Van Ginkel couldn't apply that. No, it's just interesting what you're saying about going on and coming off again, because that happened to Benteke against Norwich at the weekend when he went off. And then they were like, go on, get back on. You're not that badly hurt. And then he was like 2 yards on the pitch and collapsed. And then he's out for about six weeks.
Yeah, he certainly is. Oh, all right, then. So Spurs-Chelsea, what do you think?
I don't know. Chelsea are in a little bit of a state at the moment, aren't they? They didn't play well against Fulham. And anyone hoping for an upset against Swindon, that really wasn't going to happen. Then, you know, Mourinho's too professional for that. It was just game over after about half an hour. But they did lose Ramirez. I don't know if he's going to be okay, but he came on for Van Ginkel and then went off at half-time with a knock. So they might be a little bit short in midfield as well. Mm-hmm. Mata played and it was quite interesting to see him throw himself about a little bit and track back and concede a few corners here and there. He put in one good pass for Torres to hit the goalkeeper's head with his chip. And William played as well. I didn't really see a lot from him. It was a bit selfish when he went through and missed a few chances. One way could have played it across to Torres and stroked it wide, but he didn't do a lot apart from that, to be honest. And I think they've got to get Mata into the side.
Right, okay. But do you think he'll play against Spurs?
No.
Right.
Luis played as well, and again, the only real threat that Swindon had in the first half was when he gave away a stupid back heel or something in his own half, and you just think that Mourinho wouldn't have appreciated it.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. Sorry, Paul, you were going to throw something at us.
I was just going to say, it's one of those games where if Spurs win, then you might sense a slight changing of the guard, not the guard, but the order, their prospects this season.
The balance of power.
Yeah, and all those things.
Yeah.
But which would make you think that it won't happen.
Oh.
But at the same time, I think that Spurs, of all the teams that have seen playing in the Premier League this season, have the most quality in the final third, particularly in that, you know, attacking setup behind the striker. And if Chelsea come and try and play a defensive game like they did against United, if anybody could unpick that with good interplay, it would be Spurs.
Well, we saw that last weekend against Cardiff.
Yeah.
Of course, what about the two men on the touchline? The first time that Andre Villas-Boas and Mourinho go head-to-head, and it doesn't seem like there's a huge amount of friendship left over from their long working relationship. I might be wrong about that.
No, I was just reading somewhere today that there was an interview with Mourinho. They asked him who he thought the best coach aside from him in Portugal was, and he said Rui Faria, and he hasn't even managed the team yet. Obvious slight towards Villas-Boas. And then later on he was asked, do you see any similarities between yourself and AVB, and he said no, none.
Right, that is interesting. Of course, from Andre Villas-Boas' perspective, it's not just Mourinho, it's the ghosts of his past at Stamford Bridge. So a very emotionally highly charged game, this, for the man in the tight trousers and fashionable Macintosh.
Yeah, except he's moved on and he's been put in charge of this.
That's
massive
my narrative.
Project.
I'm sticking to it,
yeah,
Paul.
No, fair enough. And I'm sure he will be familiar with that one, right, when you present it to him.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see what is said in the pre-match briefings, presumably, which will be held on Friday. There's every chance Mourinho could roll a grenade in, and so it's a bit early to say yet how much needle there'll be. I think if I was going to predict an outcome, I'd go for Spurs, but not with any huge amount of confidence.
Ooh. We had the big thing between them just before the end of the transfer window with the whole Willian saga, and Spurs believing that Chelsea did sign him specifically to derail Tottenham and make sure that they didn't have a squad capable of challenging them, because I think they do have a squad capable of challenging Chelsea this season, and Spurs were furious about it.
And went and got Lamella instead.
Yeah, they did, and Eriksen as well. But yeah, I think Mourinho was very amused. I was there when the day that they had gone and nabbed him, and he wasn't doing a lot to hide how amused he was by nicking Willian off them. So you know, there is a little bit going on there.
Wow, what game that's set to be then. Tottenham taking on Chelsea. Before we go any further, let's talk about the match coming up at Anfield, as Liverpool, beaten of course Wednesday night by Man United, face managerless, or in the hands of Kenny Ballness's Sunderland. Not Kenny Ball and his Jazz. <That's it. laughs>
They might as well have been in the hands of Kenny Ball.
To Thor, because they haven't settled on who the next man's going to be. So just putting it out.
It looks like it's going to be Gus Poyet. Apparently initially he wasn't convinced that it was the gig for him.
And the Wilson-Glenning axis of braininess?
Doesn't look like that's going to happen, which is a shame.
That is a shame.
But yeah, Kevin Ball sort of steadied the ship. They got a win against Peterborough in the Capital One Cup. Mm. They now have to take on Liverpool in the very unlikely event they win that. And maybe it's not very unlikely, because now, the players seem to be gleefully happy on just to be rid of Di Canio. So who knows what might happen. Kevin Ball has made it clear he would quite like the game. He's a former Sunderland player. He was a good player, actually. I don't know what he's like as a coach, but I think he's well liked at the club. But if Sunderland won, then maybe that would they possibly consider him.
I don't know. In the meantime, post of the week from Chiny Copper, who says everyone is saying they're not surprised at the Di Canio sacking. Personally, I did not see this one coming. Did Nazi. Yeah. Anyway, it's a shame, though, when you look at the whole kind of managerial, dare I use the word, paradigm that Mourinho, to an extent, but mostly Andre Villas, has really ushered in into the world of modern football, i.e. the nerdy bloke, the swatty bloke, the kind of brain who compiles massive dossiers, coming in to the rough, tough football people's world of football and being really successful, as he is being and has been. It's a shame that we don't go the step further and bring in a Jonathan Wilson with Barry Glendinning. And just see how that works out.
To be honest, I'm probably one of the few football fans out there who's utterly confident I would not be able to manage a club.
Right.
I wouldn't have a clue.
What about Jonathan Wilson? Would he be able to?
I think he would probably be able to. He'd need coaches, obviously, and would have a backroom team. But
that all managers do.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd make an absolute. If you put me in charge of Manchester United,
you'd be
United
the number
now,
two, though, wouldn't you? You'd be the gaffer's mate, but the one who's nice to the players.
Possibly
cleans up after Jono's lobbed a hand grenade in the canyon.
Or
style.
Maybe like Pat Rice, maybe he's the hard one.
Yeah, maybe.
But have you thought about basically when Poyet gets the job, that you and Jonathan Wilson set up Football Manager at exactly this point in the season,
right,
and just play every game until Poyet gets sacked?
See
and
who
then
finishes higher.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
See, I don't even know how to play Football Manager.
Right.
So.
But you can help, Jonathan. I'm going to move on then, but thanks for that. Up next, it's Abroad. Going to have a quick mention for Roma, if I may. May I?
Oh, you may. I read Paolo Bandini submitted his midweek Serie A review this morning. I had a read of it. It was in my email inbox. It seemed there was very interesting midweek fixtures in Italy.
No,
Napoli only drew with lowly.
Well, this is the thing. Sassuolo at home to Inter last weekend lost 7-0. So then they went to league-leading Napoli at the San Paolo, drew 1-1.
That's very Rafa, isn't it?
I suppose it is, yeah.
But
it's very football.
It's very Rafa.
Right.
According to Bandini, their manager showed the players a betting coupon before the game in and pointed out, you know, you're 20-1 to beat this. They said, you know, that's an insult to these footballers.
It was Sergio Di Francesco, the manager, and who was very much on his last legs after the disastrous defeat to Inter. But what a result for them, and it all means...
He would, though, have to question the wisdom of a Serie A manager walking around a dressing room with betting slips or possibly leaving them lying around.
No, I imagine he just picked up one of the ones that was already there.
Roma,
who beat Sampdoria, therefore go alone on top and for the first time in their history have won their first five games. The unheralded French manager Rudy Garcia, who's coming from Lille, doing an absolutely bang up job there. Interestingly, Roma, all their goals so far this season are all in the second half.
Yeah, well, Paolo mentioned this in his copy, saying that, well, first of all, that Rudy Garcia strikes me as the absolute Di Canio, if you know what I mean. He's fiercely protective of his players. Accused some Roma fans who...
Being Lazio fans.
Yeah.
You criticise their team, you must be Lazio.
Must have gone down well.
Well, it's funny, because the Roma fans, they've always had this slogan, La Roma non si discute si ama. You don't criticise Roma, you love it.
Yeah.
Well, then, so that's absolutely bang on what you said.
But team morale seems to be at an all-time high. Mm. Players are left out and they don't complain. You know, he seems to have done everything right that Paolo Di Canio did wrong.
Hmm.
According to Bandini as well, their game is very tempo-based. You know, they dictate the tempo and sort of wear the opposition down, pass them to death by a thousand cuts in the first half and then go for the jugular in the second. And that's why all their goals have come in the second half.
Fair enough. And Gervinho scoring. Brilliant stuff. 2-0 win anyway over Samp. They play Bologna this weekend. We'll be doing that live Sunday evening. Bologna, who was 3-1 up against Milan, but got pegged back as the Rossoneri rescued a point. 3-3 it finished. Milan without Mario Balotelli, who's got a three-game ban for his in-your-face antics with the referees at the final whistle of their game last weekend against Napoli, during which he apparently threatened to kill the referees. They took a dim view of this, and he's got a three-game ban. Yikes. Other things in Italy there are lots of, and we'll mention some of these in the pay-per-view, but I should just tell you that Gennaro Gattuso has been fired by Palermo.
Excited the thing?
I don't know. Why?
You think he'll tell him to my face? Or?
Yeah, front him out. Zamperini's got plenty of practice in sending managers on their way. I believe we're in the mid-40s in terms of managerial changes in his 24 years in football, Zamperini. So pretty good going. Spain? Madrid derby coming up. Let's see if we can get a hold of that Sid Lowe fella.
Hello, James.
Hi. What are you up to this morning?
I am. Well, I'm still fighting myself. In that I was all set up to write something about Rayo Vallecano this morning, and then the excrement hit the air blowing device very late last night with the Real Madrid game, and I'm now thinking, I almost can't bear the thought of writing about it, but I sort of feel obliged now to write about the Madrid game instead.
Everybody else is writing about it. Agarón a la Liga.
Yeah, tug on the league. Pepe is one of the sneakiest cheats around. And Pepe basically, in an attacking corner for Madrid in the 96th minute, he kind of pushes at the defender and then throws himself backwards, holding the defender's arm, so that he goes down with the defender on top of him so that it looks like a foul. Referee gives a penalty. Madrid win 2-1. It was one of three kind of headline decisions that went Real Madrid's way, and everyone has gone absolutely mad. You know, my favourite bit of it was the tweet from the police force just after midnight last night saying, we've had over 100 tweets. Yes, we don't respond to things like this. In other words, people have been tweeting the police and say, please, there's a robbery.
And this team, and this LG, they just pegged them back in, what was it, the 90th minute?
Yeah, so they got I think it was 92, they got the equaliser, and then Madrid get this penalty, which, as I say, is a pretty laughable penalty, really. Although, one of the things I was trying to insist on last night, talking there's kind of a huge debate about this on Spanish radio last night, one of the things I kept saying to people is we all point the finger at the referee, and rightly so, because the referee, particularly this referee, is a really bad one. But we all say, oh, the referee's the bad guy. Well, surely the bad guy is the player that cons the referee.
Spot on.
Rather than the person who falls into the trap.
Right, now, well, a huge game coming up for Madrid. Loath though I am to focus on them, but there is a Madrid derby coming up this weekend against Atletico, who are sharing the lead in the Liga with Barcelona. Sid, Ancelotti at Paris Saint-Germain, he won the title, but I think a lot of people would say he never really convinced with his football. How is Real Madrid looking under him?
Yeah, well, I mean, Ancelotti himself said last night that if we play like this, we won't beat Atletico Madrid. And I think that's quite right. I think Madrid have largely not played particularly well this year. There's been little glimpses. There's been, I think, a desire to evolve into something a little bit different. And yet, at the same time, when they've really looked strong is when they've kind of gone back to that ability to play on the break with an enormous amount of speed, very, 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 very incisive. Obviously, we'll see if they shift a little bit when Gareth Bale's fully fit and is able to play and be a regular part of the side. But it's definitely true that they're not convincing at all at the moment. It's early, isn't it? I mean, what are we, week six? Although I think it's almost as if it's week seven because it's all kind of merged together. But yeah, the questions have definitely been asked. And not least because, bear in mind, the context of this is off the back of Mourinho. And that criticism that Mourinho faced, by the end at least, pretty consistently in the Spanish media, of Madrid aren't very exciting, they don't play good football, they're not good to watch. Not least because there was this sense somehow as if really good counter-attacking football somehow doesn't count. And actually, when Madrid got it right last year with Mourinho, and more to the point the year before, they were really quite exciting to watch on the break. But there is this kind of puritanical streak to the Spanish media. So Ancelotti comes in theory at least, precisely to undo some of that and to make Madrid more expansive and more technical. And it's not really happened yet.
Interestingly, am I right in saying that Mourinho's last game was the last meeting with Atletico Madrid, in which finally, after so many years of waiting, Atleti actually got the win in the derby?
Yeah, first one in 25 games going back to 1999, blowing away that fatalism, scoring a winner in extra time at the Bernabeu in the final of the Copa del Rey. I wrote at the time that there will be, and that there are Atletico Madrid fans who consider that the biggest victory in their entire history because of the emotional impact of it. So that does change the focus for this derby. I think not least because it means that Atletico Madrid can lose, but it won't feel the same if they do. You know, it won't be, oh God, here we go again, we always lose to Real Madrid. It will be, we lost because of whatever reason it is they lose the game, if they lose. And the other thing is that Atletico Madrid are playing really, really well at the moment. As you said, they're top of the table level with Barcelona, although behind them on goal difference now because it's no longer alphabetical order that decides it because Barca have got those extra goals. And they look really, really strong. So I think this is really quite exciting, this derby.
Sid, the Diego Torres story in El País about Mou blubbing when he didn't get the Man United job, has that made waves in Spain, or are people treating it with a pinch of salt?
No, of course it has. It's made quite a big impact here. But the context of this is that Diego Torres is, for those who don't know, the El País journalist who's been writing, who's their Real Madrid correspondent, been writing a lot about Real Madrid, and particularly about what's going on inside the dressing room over the last 3 years of the Mourinho era. It's really interesting because at the start, he was writing stories about how there were tensions and about how some players were not sure and there were doubts about how it was going to happen and how this might turn nasty. And a lot of Real Madrid fans and quite a lot of other journalists, and in particular those fans who really identify with Mourinho, really went for Diego Torres and said, oh, this is nonsense, he's making it all up and all the rest of it. But actually, as things started to unravel, where it is true that some fans would be entitled to question the interpretation, perhaps, of some of it, as things came to unravel, actually Diego Torres was vindicated to a large extent because virtually everything he said came off. And nobody has challenged him really on the details. A lot of people have challenged him on, you hate Mourinho, or you, this, that and the other, but no one's challenged him on the details. And I think the book's going to be fascinating because, of course, this is a serialization of the book, which is out in Spain yesterday, I think, and is coming to the UK in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Wow. Cool. Super. All right. Well, that's magnificent. Sid, have a super weekend. We look forward to hearing from you next week.
Fantastic. Speak to you on Monday. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Hey, Fabrizio Ravanelli, not sure if you're across his managerial career.
I'm not, no.
All right. Well, he somewhat surprisingly, he was hired by Corsican side Ajaccio, and he's brought in the whole kind of mid-90s Juve coaching team, and they're doing extra intense preparatory work and giving the players lots of legal products. But it hasn't been working out. They haven't had any win. They got a win. They finally got a win. They beat Lyon, surprisingly enough, 2-1.
Have they been creating enough chances?
Hey, that was never proved. Actually, it was. Actually, creatine wasn't illegal at the time.
All right.
It wasn't illegal at the time.
Is creatine illegal now?
I don't know. I think it might be, actually, for footballers.
Okay.
Crikey, actual knowledge, we're not big on that.
No.
Yeah. Mr. Chop, says, just listening to Football Weekly from Monday. Simple solution to 2022 conundrum, play the games at night. Where do I collect my Nobel Prize? I think people have suggested that before, have they not, Mr. Chop? Playing the games at night in Qatar?
Yeah. I'd imagine they would be playing some at night anyway. They'd not have to play some in the afternoon as well.
But the problems of the whole Qatar World Cup go a little bit beyond temperature these days. And our very own Guardian playing a big role, a very necessary role in highlighting some of these problems.
Yeah, the story on today's front page, written by Pete Patterson in Kathmandu and Doha, about the exploitation of Qatar's World Cup slaves. So people employed to build an entire city, basically. Nepalese workers are dying at a rate of one a day from heart attacks mainly. They're working in terribly dangerous conditions. Health and safety seems to be minimal on these building sites, and a lot of them are having their passports confiscated so they can't leave.
And the wages withheld as well.
Withheld as well, and they owe money to recruitment firms who got them the jobs in the first place.
Right. So it's all this is one of the richest nations in the world. Qatar has issued various statements saying there's absolutely no truth in these allegations at all. And then another one saying that they would have a commission looking into it. And they also brilliantly suggested that them having the World Cup could be a spur to them improving worker conditions.
Ah, right, okay.
There we go.
Maybe they should give them the World Cup then, and they might do that.
Yeah.
No, it's a very interesting story. Well, it's shocking, but not hugely surprising, I suppose, when you hear what's been going on there in recent years. But apparently there's a lot more to come on this, so it'll be...
Well, Philippe Auclair has written an excellent series on the Eurosport website about this, and David Conn's been doing a lot on this as well. So yeah, you can find all that Eurosport, Guardian, and I think a lot of other places as well. That's it for this part. Still to come, though, the rest of the Premier League weekend. All right, listeners, you've been very patient. Another 5 minutes or so and we'll get this baby wrapped up and put to bed. What are West Ham doing this weekend, Jacob?
They're at Hull.
At Hull? You know, winning on Tyneside Hull.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Doing well.
All right. Is that going to be a busy afternoon for Jaskalainen? They always are, aren't they?
Yeah, as long as he doesn't have to face any free kicks, should be all right.
But you beat Cardiff in the Cup.
Yeah, and Ravel Morrison was again very good. Man of the match. Scored a goal after 20 seconds. Somehow Cardiff managed to concede for inside of minutes by having kickoff.
Wow.
Which is impressive.
That is impressive. Yeah. But Morrison, the supremely talented Morrison, and so far Big Sam's doing a good job of keeping the rest of him under lock and key.
Indeed, yeah.
Okay, good.
What's his demeanour like on the field? Is he...
He's intelligent on the field, yeah, he's good.
He's not like petulant or strops or anything like that.
He had a little bit of bad tackle against Southampton a couple of weeks ago. Otherwise, nothing really to suggest that he's... bad character.
All right. West Ham away at Hull with the KC.
Yeah, they've had 2-0 draws away from home this season, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's another lockdown from Allardyce.
Okay. In other fixture news, Villa, who got beaten 4-0 by Spurs, as we mentioned earlier, which won't have helped their general kind of air of on the brink of crisisness, are hosting a Man City team fresh from that big win in the, 4-1, of course, in the Manchester derby.
Yeah, it's difficult to see Villa getting anything from this, and the absence of Christian Benteke won't help. It's sort of stating the obvious there. While you were away in China doing the World's Strongest Man, I was accused of tipping Villa to win the Premier League. I didn't, but it was a slip of the tongue, but I did predict...
See, you are going back in time to change
that. Yeah, I'll change that. I did predict that they'd possibly finish ninth, I think it was. And
there's still time.
There is, of course, but they haven't got off to the start I expected, and it's difficult to know quite what's gone wrong. I haven't seen enough of them to know. Maybe
they've got great pace on the counter attack and a reasonable trio of forwards, led by Benteke, who is head and shoulders above everybody else. Bon Lahore has been in a great run of form, but I think Weimann has fallen out of form a little bit, and without that three working, I think the limitations of the rest of the side against Norwich, we were terrible, but they look pretty ordinary.
Against Norwich, as indeed against Arsenal, which they won, the Villa player who had the most touches was actually goalkeeper Brad
Guzan. Yeah, and that as shameful as it was that we couldn't get a goal past them, I think that stat about no clean sheets in 28 league games or something is pretty damning, or pretty reflective of the state of the team. I think it'd be difficult to see beyond the Man City win there either.
They've scored 9 goals, conceded 1 in the last 2 games, Man City. Woof. It's Southampton, meanwhile, are hosting Crystal Palace, a game you'll be attending, Jacob. You didn't have much fun in your last visit to St Mary's. What about this one?
No, or the one before, actually. They're a bit weird at home. They don't really play that well when you expect them to, and they kind of find it a bit difficult against teams that come and sit back. Crystal Palace might do that. Equally, you never really know with the Holloway side whether they'll go for it, as they have done here and there so far this season. But Southampton haven't scored from open play yet this season, which is interesting given they have Ricky Lambert and Daniel Osvaldo up front, and likes of Rodriguez and Lallana flitting around them. But
Ramirez,
he's a bit lightweight at times. I think Ramirez, a lot of talent, but hasn't really justified that big fee. But they equally, they haven't really conceded that many. He's sorted that side out, but maybe at the expense of the other end. They just seem to struggle against teams that come and sit back, especially at home.
But one thing about them is they do play this high pressing game where they try and, you know, win the ball back high up the pitch. And as we've all seen at Crystal Palace so far, Crystal Palace have made a pretty shocking start to the season, and then in attempts to pass the ball out from the back in a cultured style, which usually ends up them playing blind back passes or shanking it into the stands.
That sounds a dangerous combination.
One of the problems they've had is that Wanyama has come in and kind of disrupted what was said before, I think, a very good partnership in midfield between Jack Cork and Morgan Schneiderlin. And Wanyama's very good at winning the ball, but when he has it, it doesn't really seem to know what to do with it. And there's a lot of times when that second touch is a tackle, and you know he is struggling a little bit. And you won't struggle to find Southampton fans who want Cork to play instead of him.
Excellent stuff. Everton are hosting Newcastle.
That'll be an interesting game.
Yeah. Why?
Because Everton have started playing well. They'll be looking to find consistency. Pardew was incandescent after the weekend's defeat to Hull. They've got something to prove as well. So,
what about Fulham Cardiff?
Alan Pardew being incandescent. Can imagine me being sort of slightly annoyed. Does he even?
No, have you not seen his touchline fist pumping business?
Well, it was more that he was saying he was incandescent. It was the pre-match press conference, and he was saying we're going to put out this strong side and blah blah blah, we're going to compete. But he was saying, because I can't get this out of my system, it's 2 days, I can't stop thinking about la la la. But it was more he was talking about it rather than actually reflecting an incandescent. So you're right there, Barry.
Right. Okay. Fulham Cardiff, that was a bit of a surprise. We're talking about Everton. They just got beaten by Fulham in the League Cup.
I'm still not convinced by Fulham either. I think there's too much talent without responsibility in that side.
Yeah, well, of course.
I don't know. I mean, they've got Parker and Sidwell and Karagounis to scrap it out in central midfield. It's more that they, against Chelsea last weekend, they just didn't really have an idea what to do once they fell behind. They missed Berbatov as well. Darren Bent wasn't fit, but he got a goal the other night.
Mm. It was a nice finish as well. Mm. Yeah. I'm not entirely convinced of Karagounis, Sidwell and Parker.
But they are players who can at least give you a bit of fight in midfield.
Yeah.
Alongside the Berbatovs and Tarak.
Ruiz's.
Yeah.
But Fulham thus far this season sort of remind me of Sunderland under Martin O'Neill towards the end, just kind of sleepwalking their way through games without really having anything resembling a coherent plan or particularly seeming to care what happens to them. It's just something that needs to be addressed by Martin Joel.
Well, as you've pointed out in the past, they do have an absolutely awful record of late at home. Previously, Fortress Craven Cottage, now just 1 point from their last 6 games there. So,
their away form has always been terrible. So,
it's not a good combination, is it? No. Let's finish off then by just mentioning those brave Canaries and their visit to Stoke. Will you be going along to that, Paul?
Well, it's one of those ones that I'll be playing football. It's a Sunday afternoon thing, but it's one of those jumping into the crisis pot situations, I think.
Ooh.
We played dreadfully on last Saturday with no passion and a lot of sleepwalking. That was a real concern for me, and a lot of fans have been anti-Houghton all season, been against him for quite a long time, actually, but I felt there was a sense of things bubbling over a little bit. Then we equalise, we come back from 2-0 down, equalise in the 90th minute and score in added time with this amazing goal where Leroy Fer plays this through ball through about 7 players and Hooper runs on to finish like a pro, which we haven't been doing. And suddenly there's a little bit of hope again.
Right. Well, can I point out to you that you actually have 1 more point than you did at this stage last season?
Yeah, and 1 less than the season before or something like that. But, I think this is a real challenge for us because Hughes' Stoke have been consistent.
All right. Well, that's what awaits this weekend. Look forward to seeing all of that and reporting back to you on Monday There will be a pay-per-view up in the meantime, Thursday evening, Friday morning, so join me for that if you will. And in the meantime, it's many thanks to guest producer Ian, Barry Glendenning, Paul McInnes, and struggling through the pain, Jacob Steinberg. Thanks, Jacob. Nice one. Cheers, listeners. See you on Monday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you will get 20% off in September by going to squarespace.com and using the offer code Guardian.